Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So don't get your hopes up. It is good to be in the Word, though. All right, whether it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, whatever it is, it's good to be in the Word, and that's what I want to bring you today in Luke chapter 19. It's a story that we're familiar with, and this gives you a little highlight, a little preview of what it would be. It's about Zacchaeus up in the sycamore tree. So 5 years ago, I got to go to Israel, and we found this sycamore tree, so I had to get my picture up in the sycamore tree. This may give you a little of idea of the story that we're going to be looking at today. Zacchaeus is, he's good for short people, you know. He lets you know that short people are generous, they're determined, they're creative, and if there's not a patron saint for short people, well, Zacchaeus ought to be it. But we're going to be in Luke chapter 19, so turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 19. This is near the end of Jesus' life. He's on his way to Jerusalem, and this is the last trip that he's going to make to Jerusalem. This is where all the Passion Week is going to take place, the betrayal, the crucifixion, all those things. But on the way to Jerusalem, he's passing through a very well-known city, a large city, the city of Jericho. It's not too far away from Jerusalem. You can look at your maps at the back of your Bible, and you can see exactly where it is. But he runs into this character that we're all familiar with. Most of us are familiar with the tax collector Zacchaeus and how Jesus has an encounter with him. Actually, Zacchaeus has an encounter with Jesus. They're both blessed by this meeting that they have. So let me read you the story. It's in Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he, Zacchaeus, came down at once and welcomed Jesus gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Lord, look, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost." So many wonderful things here. Let's just look at Zacchaeus, what it reveals about Zacchaeus, what we can learn about him as we go through this familiar story. Zacchaeus was determined. He really wanted to see Jesus, and his determination is impressive and a model for every one of us. He seemed to have everything going against him. He was a tax collector. We talked about that a lot last week. They were not liked by Jewish people, and it would have been really easy for Zacchaeus just to hold himself up in his home or his tax collector's booth and just stayed away from the crowd, because when Zacchaeus was in a crowd of Jewish people, he probably got a lot of dirty looks. So he was a tax collector. He was wealthy. And just in the chapter before this, Jesus has an encounter with a rich young man. And Jesus says, "Man, you've got to get over this desire to become wealthy." And he challenges the man to sell all that he has and give it to the poor and to become a follower of Jesus. And so the disciples hear that and they say, "Wow, it's got to be hard for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven." And that's exactly what Jesus says. It is hard for rich people to enter the kingdom of heaven. There's this tendency, there's this temptation to gravitate to security in our wealth. And Jesus says that works so much against us giving our lives over to Jesus. And he says it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than for someone rich to enter the kingdom of God. And so he's a tax collector, and he's a chief tax collector, so he's probably even more wealthy than your run-of-the-mill everyday tax collector. And then, of course, he's short, and that makes it difficult for him to see this procession that is coming through his Jesus. But he really, really wants to see Jesus. He really wants to. We've got to want to see Jesus. We've got to be determined to see Jesus. We've got to determine in our hearts. We've got to do whatever we can to see Jesus. We've got to be in places where we can find Jesus. Places like this. I mean, this is where we find Jesus. We're in the Word every Sunday morning. We take communion every Sunday morning, and we're in the presence of other people who are seeking to find Jesus. So where else do you go? Make sure that you're in a position where you can see Jesus, and don't let anything distract you from that desire to see Jesus. You may be watching online today. And I don't know, this goes out everywhere. Sometimes we get comments from people that we don't have any clue how they came across this live stream. One thing, if you're watching online, you may be saying, you know, it's really hard for me to go to church, but you need to be determined to be part of a Christian community. You need to climb down from that tree, do whatever you need to do. And even if you know Jesus, I know all of us know Jesus to some degree or another, we need to be determined to know Him more, to go out of your way. Make it a priority in your life. Are you studying the Bible? Are you reading the Bible? Are you praying to God? Do you have Christian fellowship with other believers? Are you in those situations where you find God? Do you really want to see Jesus? Because honestly, there's a lot of other things calling for your attention, a lot of other things that you could be doing. Be determined to see Jesus. And we cannot just be content to see Jesus, but we want to really know Him. And that's Zacchaeus. He just didn't want to see Jesus. He says he wanted to see who Jesus was. All right? So he just didn't want to catch an eye of Jesus. He wanted to know more about Jesus. I want to know Christ, is what Paul says in Philippians chapter 3, verses 10 to 11. In Luke chapter 19, there's a couple of passages here. John chapter 17 in verse 3, in Jesus' prayer in the garden, he says, "This is eternal life, that they may know you, the only true God." And there we sang this song, Philippians chapter 3. I want to know Christ. This is Paul's desire. I want to know the power of His resurrection. I want to become like Him. And so do you really want to know Jesus? Zacchaeus was determined. I've got to find out who this guy is. I've got to discover more and more about him. In Luke chapter 19 and verse 3, let me just point out a word in our English translations that indicate this. He says in verse 3, he wanted to see who Jesus was. That word wanted is the same word that we see in Luke chapter 19 verse 10, where Jesus says, I've come to seek and save the lost. And so Zacchaeus was seeking to see who Jesus was. I mean, he was determined. Didn't just want a casual glance. He was seeking actually to know Jesus. So are you determined? Are you determined to know who Jesus is? Zacchaeus was, is an example to us. And then we see that Zacchaeus was willing to allow that encounter with Jesus to transform him. So we see in this meeting that Jesus changed Zacchaeus' perception on what he did for a living. I don't know why Zacchaeus was a tax collector, but perhaps one of the reasons why he chose to be a tax collector is because it was pretty lucrative. He knew he could make a good living by being a tax collector. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with looking for a job where you can provide well for your family, where you can do some good things. But as Zacchaeus met Jesus and had that encounter with Jesus, it changed his perception on what he was supposed to do with the worldly wealth that he had. Instead of seeing it as just all for himself, he sees his worldly possessions as a way to bless other people. And so we see Zacchaeus makes this great confession, this profession. I'm going to give half of my possessions to the poor. That is way more than the Old Testament law prescribes. In the Old Testament, there's this concept of a tithe, which was 10%. And so Zacchaeus is exceeding that. But that has changed. His whole perception on his wealth has changed once he has met Jesus, not just meeting Jesus, but beginning to know Jesus and encountering Jesus. And then he's also willing to repay anyone whom he has wronged four times the amount. And Zacchaeus probably had done that. Tax collectors were notorious for defrauding people, taking more than they were supposed to. And he says, I'm going to give back four times as much if I have defrauded anyone. Again, in the Old Testament, there's a law in Leviticus 6:5 and in Numbers 5:7 that says, if you have taken more than you should have taken, then you need to repay that, make restitution. The Old Testament law says give 20% more, one-fifth more. So again, Zacchaeus is way exceeding that mandate from the law of Moses. And so why do you do what you do? You know, if you're working, why do you do what you do? Why have you chosen your profession? Zacchaeus challenges us to see our ability to make money as an opportunity to bless other people. It's no longer all about myself. All right, Proverbs says in Proverbs 3:9, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. And so this story teaches us that our relationship with money has to be influenced by our relationship with Jesus. And it's not that his generosity saves him, but Jesus recognizes that this is a sure sign that he has been transformed. His mindset has changed. So are you determined to see Jesus? Are you doing everything you can to be in his presence and to know him, just not just catch a glance at him? Do you really want to know who Jesus is? And then when you encounter Jesus, that's going to lead to some transformation. Jesus always transforms people when he has an encounter with them. So are you willing to be transformed? Have you been transformed? Has anything about you changed as you have gotten to know Jesus and as you have grown in your knowledge of Jesus? Are you willing to see things about your life that need to be changed? Are there some things in your life that you need to say, Jesus, I've been handling my money wrong, I've been handling my time wrong, I've been treating people wrong? When we encounter Jesus, we're just transformed. One of the most transformed people we see in the New Testament is the Apostle Paul. He went from killing Christians to being one of the leading missionaries of Christianity. So he writes to Christians. And in Romans chapter 12, he says, this is what happens. You've got to be willing to be transformed. He says, instead of being conformed to the pattern of the world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So do you see things differently? Zacchaeus was determined, and he was willing to be transformed. How is God changing you? How is your relationship with Christ changing you? And I would venture to say, if you're not being changed by that encounter with Jesus Christ, then maybe you really haven't encountered Jesus Christ. You should be different. You should change the way you relate to everything in this world. So that's Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is a great example and encouragement of us. I want to see Jesus, and then when I see Jesus, what do I need to change? All right, this story also tells us so much about Jesus as well. As I mentioned last week, reiterate this, Jesus stops for people. In Luke 19, it says Jesus intended just to pass through Jericho. It wasn't on his agenda. It wasn't on his calendar. I'm going to stop and I'll see some short little guy in a tree and I'm going to have dinner with him. I mean, Jesus was just planning on passing through, but he decided to stop. That's what Jesus does. He stops for people. Remember the story in John chapter 4, Jesus is at a well. He didn't go just to have a drink. He met this Samaritan woman and he stops and he has a conversation with her. Remember the story where Jesus is passing through a crowd and that woman who's been suffering for years and years, she reaches out, touches the hem of his garment, and she finds healing. Well, Jesus doesn't just walk through, he stops and he asks his disciples, what in the world happened here? Who touched me? Because he wanted to have a conversation with this woman. Jesus stops for people. In fact, look at the wording again in verse 5. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and he said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. I've got to do it. I mean, this guy is so demonstrating such a desire to know me, I've got to have an encounter with people. So Jesus interrupts his plans to have this dinner with Zacchaeus. And so, do you just stop, or do you stop and talk to people, or do you just rush by? Do you see people who are expressing an interest in spiritual things, you just ignore them, or are you willing to adjust your plans so that you can have that conversation with people, even tax collectors and sinners? You know, last week we had some people here for our neighbor day. You know, it's so easy to walk by a guest, isn't it? So easy just to find the people that we want to find and see what's going on in their life, check in on them. It's so easy to walk by people, but we need to stop. It is hard for people to come to church. It is difficult. For those of us who have come to this church for years and years and years, I mean, it's just, you know, we just walk in here, we feel we're at home. It's difficult for someone to walk through the doors of a church building for the very first time where they may not know many people, but they're expressing an interest in spiritual things. And so we need to be like Jesus and stop, interact with people. That's what Jesus did. It was his nature. And Jesus loved it when people showed interest. Jesus also, he stops for sinners. And again, to reiterate what I said last week, Jesus has people on his guest list that others were offended by. So naturally, people thought that this tax collector, it meant that he was a willful sinner, that he was beyond God's grace. But Jesus didn't let those labels define people. Jesus could see beyond those labels. In fact, I find it interesting here that as Zacchaeus makes that profession, I'm going to give half my possessions to the poor. I'm going to give back four times the amount to people that I've defrauded. The verbs there are used in the present sense, the present case, almost as if Zacchaeus is saying, "I've already been doing this." And that's the possibility. Zacchaeus may have always or had been in the habit of being a generous person, but other people, they saw a tax collector, and that's the furthest thing they thought in their minds. Sometimes we assume things about people because of what they do, what they look like, some stories that we've heard. There are many different reasons why we jump to conclusions and we assume some things that are not true. We have to be careful not to jump to conclusions on people based on what they look like, what they do, or any other external factor. Jesus was able to see who Zacchaeus really was. And so when we think, and this was the mentality in first century Palestine for the most part, this person's a tax collector, therefore they must be a sinner. And we do that, don't we? We do that in our minds. They are this, therefore they must be this. All right? Well, whatever it might be, you fill in the blanks. Zacchaeus is rich, he must be dishonest. And so oftentimes we play that game that they are this, so they must be that. And we have to beware of that. Who would have thought that a disciple like Zacchaeus would be found in Jericho among the tax collectors? You know, we need to be aware that good things, good people, people who are searching for Christ can be found in unlikely places. So I read a story recently of someone who was shopping at Goodwill. It was a couple in North Carolina. They sell vintage clothing, and so they're at this Goodwill store, and they found this sweater, and they paid 58 cents. For it. Great deal, right? They were going to resell it at their shop. And so they saw a TV documentary on a sweater like this one, and they did some research. They found a name tag in the sweater. They contacted some people who were experts in identifying these types of vintage articles, and they found out that this West Point sweater belonged to this gentleman here. Now, I don't know if any of you recognize who that man is. Any takers on that? It's Vince Lombardi. They found out that West Point sweater that they bought for 58 cents belonged to the legendary football coach, Vince Lombardi. And so they had it appraised. It was appraised for $20,000, and then when they auctioned it, they actually got $43,020 for a 58-cent sweater that they found in Goodwill. That's what Jesus was able to do. He was able to see worn-out people that everyone else had discarded, that everyone else had cleaned out their closet, and they sent it over to Goodwill. Jesus was able to see this incredible value in every human being. He was able to see beyond the labels, beyond the associations that we have, that we attach with people. Jesus found one of the greatest evangelists in a Samaritan woman. Back to that story about that woman at the well in John chapter 4. Here was this woman who in all likelihood was an outcast in her village. We know some of her background. She had this very hard background with all of these husbands. We don't know why she had all of these husbands, but that kind of put her on the outskirts of society there. But Jesus was able to see value in that Samaritan woman. So they start talking. They start talking about water. They start talking about living water. They start talking about how Jesus is able to meet needs, those spiritual needs that we have, in a way that water meets our physical needs, but Jesus can meet our needs like a well that will just keep springing up into eternal life. And so this woman, she's talking to Jesus, and she starts realizing that he's someone special. He's a teacher, he's a prophet. Ultimately, Jesus reveals to this woman that he is the Messiah, and then she goes back to her village. And look what happens in John 4, 28 through 30. Leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, she becomes an evangelist. She starts sharing with other people about who Jesus is. This is a man who told me everything that I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? And so all of the people come out of the town and they start making their way towards Jesus. Later on in that story, in verses 39 through 42, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of this woman's testimony. This woman who was cast away by everyone else. And so the Samaritans start coming to Jesus. They say, Jesus, stay with us. Jesus stays there for 2 days, and many of the Samaritans begin to believe because of what the woman said. But Jesus was able to see something very valuable in this woman. So Jesus, he stops for people. Do I stop for people? Do I really recognize people, especially people that are expressing an interest in spiritual things? Or do I just walk right by? I'm terrible about this. I confess. Do I make eye contact? Do I want to bring joy into people's lives? Do I want the joy of the Spirit to flow through me? And I try so hard. It doesn't always happen, but whether I'm just buying a drink at Quick Trip or at Walmart or going through the bank, I say, God, let your Spirit flow through me. And stop and really see people. And again, I need to be better. I need to be better at that. And I think probably all of us need to be better at that. Really stopping and seeing people and then able to see their real value. So those are some things. So we learn some things from Zacchaeus, don't we? Be determined. Be willing to be transformed. Because when you meet Jesus, you're going to be transformed. We learn some things about Jesus that we need to imitate as well. We need to stop for people, let people interrupt our schedules, and then we need to really see value in people. But I think we also learn something from the people who were observing this. What do they do in verse 7? All the people see this, and they begin to mutter. They begin to complain. He's gone to be the guest of a sinner. So here is something not to do. All right, let's beware of becoming grumblers when new and maybe unexpected people come to the Lord. You know, God forbid that we grumble or complain. Now, these are just some minor things, but have you ever thought these things? You know, you're driving to church and you've got a parking space and you think, oh man, who took my parking space? You know, we start grumbling and complaining. I can't believe that someone came to this church and didn't know that this was my parking space. Or have you come to church? I know all of you are very comfortable in the pews that you're in. I mean, if someone sat there, I would think, who do these people think they are? Do they think they're the preacher? You know, this is the preacher's seat, you know? Isn't this something sometimes we'll come in and we'll say, oh man, I can't sit where I normally sit. I wanted to sit there. I mean, this is just my place. We could begin to grumble and complain. Oh, we come in, and maybe the parking lot's too crowded on Easter, and we think, oh, man, these people are really cramping my style. Oh, the church is getting too crowded. There's too many people here. That's so easy to do, isn't it? We're tempted to complain when people come to the Lord, and we should rather rejoice. And that's what it seems like Jesus does, doesn't he? He seems to be thrilled about Zacchaeus. Other people are grumbling and complaining. Jesus is just thrilled. And I love this graphic. I think this may have been what Jesus looked like when he's having dinner with Zacchaeus, and everyone is just grumbling and complaining, and Jesus is just thrilled that this man had this determination to see him, and then that encounter leads him to this transformation. Jesus says, today, salvation has come to this house. Let's rejoice. This is why I came. I came to seek and to save the lost. This is a cause for joy. I'm reminded of the parable of the prodigal son and the reaction of the older brother. You know that story, don't you? The one brother goes off, gets the inheritance from the father, and what's he do with all that money? He just wastes it. Yeah, and it's not like he made a bad investment. I mean, this guy is wasting his money on things he knows his father wouldn't approve. I mean, he's drinking, he's hanging out in places he shouldn't, he's spending it in all kinds of ungodly ways, and then he comes to his senses, right? He comes to his senses, and he says, man, even the servants back home have it better than me. I'm going to go back to my father, maybe I can get a job with him. And so he goes back home, and what does the father do? Father throws a party. You know, my son who was lost, he is now found. Kill the fattened calf. Let's have a banquet. He was lost, but now he's found. And so this is a cause for joy on the part of the father. But then you have the older brother. And I think the older brother, this would have been a great story even without the older brother, wouldn't have been. I mean, it's a great story about a father's love. But Jesus includes this element in the story of the older brother. What does the older brother do? He complains. He says, man, you never thrown me a party. You know, I've always been here right with you, but what about me? And this was going on in Jesus' ministry. This was going on when Zacchaeus has this encounter with Jesus. Other people are grumbling. They're like the older brother. But listen, look at what the father says. He says, I had to celebrate. This is in verse 32. We had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost, and he is found. All right, let's wrap this up. All right, Zacchaeus, be determined. Do you really want to see who Jesus is? Do you really want to see who Jesus is? Do you use any excuse not to see who Jesus is? Yeah, I'm not going to come to church because of this, 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 and this. Or I'm not going to read my Bible because I'm too busy. I'm not going to pray because of this. I'm not going to go to my small group because of this. Do we make excuses, or do we climb up in that tree? Yeah, are we that determined to even suffer the ridicule of other people? And I'm sure people were looking at Zacchaeus, thinking, "Who is this guy? This grown man climbing this tree?" Are we really determined to see who Jesus is? Or do we just kind of work it in every now and then? And are we willing to be transformed? I know there's things in my life that need to be transformed, that Jesus is still working on me, and I know he's working on all of you. There are things in your life where Jesus is saying, hey, you know, there's some things that need to change. There's some ways, and it's not that he just wants to change you, but he's saying, here is a way where you can enjoy and be blessed by salvation even more than you have now. And there are ways that I can use you to participate in calling people, to participate in this mission of seeking and saving the lost. So what are some things? Are you willing to say, God, change me? All right? Are you willing to get down from the tree and have dinner with Jesus? You know, I don't know if Zacchaeus was actually thinking that that was going to happen, but he was willing to have this conversation. All right, and are you like Jesus? Do you stop for people, and do you see value in everyone. So today I want you to know Jesus calls you to dine with him. He's saying, come on down. I want to have lunch with you. I want to have a conversation with you. I want to know what's going on in your life. I want you to see my passion for other people, seeking and saving the lost. And then I want to invite you into joining me in that passion. And then Jesus is encouraging us. Let's see others as Jesus does. What's this next song, Basil? I knew what it was, but turn your eyes. Be thou my vision. All right. What do we see? So may Jesus' vision be our vision. And it's so clearly stated there in verse 10, isn't it? To seek and to save the lost. So may his vision be our vision. Let's stand together and sing.